girl named Tanisha was handing out mason jars of frothy, amber-hued beer from a nearby keg. I knew it was probably a micro-brewed IPA, because the Yellows didn't drink anything cheap. But I declined to take one, and so did Wink. A wind came up out of nowhere, and leaves rustled on the trees, whoosh, all at once, in that way that always gives me goosebumps. Wink's fingers tightened again. I looked down at her. The contrast with Poppy was profound. Straight blonde, shining hair. Red, frizzy, curly hair. Tall, thin. Short, small. I knew one's body. Every dip, every inch, every toe, every bend. The other had her hand in mine, and it was the first time we'd ever touched. Both were a mystery. Wink? She glanced up at me. I think I'm going to like having you Bells as my new neighbors. She nodded, face very serious. We'll be good for you. I smiled at that. Your brothers and sisters ask a lot of questions. She nodded again.
They do that to people they like.
We were speaking in short, snappy statements, and it was nothing like before, on the steps of my house, when Wink was either sweetly talking on and on about the thing in the deep, or being calmly silent, the breeze in her hair. I suppose she was hating it here, at Poppy's party. I sure as hell was. What was so fun anyway about standing in the dark, whispering and drinking beer? Maybe I'd made a mistake, not turning and running back down the path. But damn it. I didn't want Wink to think I was a coward. I'd been a coward long enough.
This is a bad house, Wink said suddenly,
looking up, way up, at the sagging roof.
The Roman Luck House is not lucky. It never was.
The Roman Luck House was a mile from town, and a mile from the Bell Farm, right in the middle. It had sat empty for years, and houses went downhill fast when no one was taking care of them. All the bushes were overgrown, the front lawn covered with pine cones. The gravel road that led to the house from town was nothing but a stretch of brown pine needles and saplings, struggling to grow in the gloom. I joined Wink in staring up at the house. Big and gray and going to ruin. The bay windows were broken, and I could see the shadow of the decaying grand piano that I knew was inside. We'd all explored the Luck House when we were younger. Dared each other to go in, to put our fingers on the chipped ivory keys, to climb up the wobbly, creaking stairs, to lie down on the dusty, rat-chewed quilt that still covered the master bed. I'd been surprised that Poppy wanted to have her party here. Fearless Poppy, who wasn't afraid of anything, except this, the Roman Luck House. Not even the Yellows knew how much she hated the place. Just me. I'd been with her last summer, right beside her as she'd climbed the porch steps and then refused to go past the doorway, like a dog catching a bad scent. She laughed and said haunted houses were stupid, but her perfectly painted toes and their delicate, expensive sandals never crossed the rotting threshold. Roman Luck's disappearance was our town's greatest mystery. He'd been young and single, a doctor at the hospital where Poppy's parents worked now. And when he bought a grand house outside of town, in the middle of the woods, and filled it with grand things, people thought he was going to marry some pretty girl and live happily ever after. But he never did. He lived in the house for 2 years, and he never threw a party or invited people over for supper. And then one morning, he didn't show up for work. Days went by. When the police finally broke down the front door, they found the inside frozen in time, as if Roman had just stepped outside for a breath of fresh air. There was a coffee pot on the table, stone cold, and a plate with a moldy, half-eaten sandwich. The milk had curdled in the fridge. The radio was even still on, playing sad old Delta Blues songs, or so went the rumors.
If I told you what happened to Roman, you wouldn't believe me,
Wink said out of nowhere, like she could read my mind. Her shoulders shrugged up, and disappeared into her messy red hair. I took the bait. Yes, I would, Wink. I'd believe you. Wink shook her head, but she was smiling. Let me guess. Ghosts drove Roman Luck screaming into the night, and now he's off in an asylum somewhere, stark raving mad. She shook her head again.
The house is haunted, but that's not why Roman left. Sometimes people just leave midnight. They realize they are on the wrong path, or that they are in the wrong story, and they just go off in the middle of the night and leave.
Here was my chance. Here was the opportunity for me to say that I knew all about people leaving. That my mom took my brother and left. Not in the middle of the night, but she left all the same. The moment was slipping by, slipping, and I was letting it. Wink gave me a searching kind of look, like she knew what I was thinking anyway.
Mim once read cards for a very, very old woman who used to live in Paris. She told my mother that she had an apartment there, on the right bank, still filled with her furniture and dresses and everything. She hadn't been back since World War II. She said that one day she decided she was done with Paris and the war, and she never went there again.
Is that true, Wink?
Of course it's true. All the strangest stories are true.
And then we both abruptly stopped talking. We just stood next to each other and didn't talk. It was coming back, the feeling from earlier, the calm, peaceful feeling. Laughter. I looked up. The yellows were staring at us. Poppy, too. She said something, and they laughed again. And then she repeated it. Louder.
I bet Feral Belle has little girl underwear on. I bet she still wears white cotton panties with polka dots or butterflies. What do you say, yellows? Should we find out?
Shut up, Poppy. And I tried to say it cool, say it how Alabama would say it, but I must have done it wrong because Poppy just smirked at me, long and slow. I looked at Wink and her face was serene. Calm.
Grab them,
Poppy said. And the yellows were on us. The guys held my arms and I couldn't move. Buttercup and Zoe went for Wink, and she didn't budge, didn't even flinch. Just stood there, looking peaceful. Almost like she'd been expecting this all along and was glad to get it over with. The non-yellows gathered around, watching, waiting to see what Poppy would do next. Tanisha and Guillermo and Finn and Della and Sung. Rich, shiny hair. Rich, shiny clothes. Rich, shiny faces. Don't, I said. Don't, Poppy. Please. I didn't even try to sound like my brother this time. But her arms shot out and grabbed the edge of Wink's green dress and yanked it up. Wink's skinny white legs, red socks to her knobby knees. Wink's underwear, white, with little unicorns on them, just as Poppy had predicted. Poppy pointed.
See?
She said. And laughed. And laughed.
Poppy. Leaf graduated and left. I was 16, and I wasn't sure I had a heart until it fucking broke in two, ripped shreds and veins and blood everywhere. He didn't even tell me where he went, just up and off, and I even saw him the day after graduation, standing on the road at the end of my street, waiting for the bus, the sun setting behind him, green duffel bag over his shoulder. I would have thought he did it on purpose, caught the bus where I was bound to see him. Except that would have meant Leaf thought about me, and I knew he didn't. He gave me a nod as he climbed the steps. That's it. Like I was a fucking postman or a stranger in the street. I tried to reach him, ran all the way. I was as good at running as I was at everything else. I tore, strained, but the doors shut, and the bus pulled away. And that was the last time I saw him. I'd sworn that I'd never let a boy steal me. Steal my heart, my mind, any single part of me. I'd sworn it over and over since I was old enough to know the difference. But my knees hit the pavement with a crack anyway. And I lost it. I totally lost it. 1 second. 2 seconds. Head hanging. Eyes gushing. But people could see. They might be watching. I got back up and left two bloody scrapes on the sidewalk where my kneecaps had been. I thought about finding Zoe and Buttercup and spilling my guts and telling them my secrets, I could see them in my head. Black dresses and striped socks, patting my shoulders and graciously tolerating my new vulnerability while losing respect for me with every tear that slid down my face. I went over to the Hunt house instead and lost my virginity to midnight.
Wink. I barely even noticed when the wolf did what she did at the Roman Luck house. My head was all caught up in the unforgivables who were bothering me, even with the sugar. So I'd started thinking up a plan to get rid of them for good. I decided to show Midnight the hayloft. The hayloft is where events happen and plots unfold. And I wanted events to happen and plots to unfold.
Midnight. Wink didn't cry or anything. I don't know why I thought she would. The Bells never cried. That's one of the reasons they were impossible to bully. She was quiet as I walked her back home. But then she'd been pretty quiet the whole night. And I didn't know her well enough to know if that's how she usually was anyway. She didn't talk in school, but neither did I, and it didn't prove a thing.
Do you want to see the hayloft, Midnight?
We stepped out of the trees and back onto her farm. Two of the dogs got up from where they were sleeping in the long grass near the chicken coop. They shook themselves and came over to greet us, soft warm tongues on my cold hands. Yes, I do, Wink. And she smiled, lips parting slightly, eyes bright. Just like that. Like she'd already forgotten that her dress had been pulled up and her unicorn underwear seen by a dozen kids from school. How did she do it? How did she not care? I was in awe of her all of a sudden. I used to be in awe of Poppy. All those years ago, laughing at her blood-dripping knees at the edge of my driveway, her bicycle in a heap beside her. That's how I used to be. Wink's farmhouse was dark, and I figured it must be around 11. The lights were still on in my house across the road, though, which was typical. Dad often read and worked until deep into the night. We were both night owls. Mom and Alabama were morning people. I walked over to the ladder I'd seen Wink on earlier. I put my hand on a rung and started climbing. I'd never been a guy for heights. That was my brother, who used to go cliff jumping at the Alpine Lake near Kill Devil Peak. But I'd never seen the point of risking your life for one good fall. Up and up. My hands were sweaty, and my right palm slipped. I looked down at Wink's red head, coming up beneath me, and felt all right again. I got to the top of the ladder and put one knee in the square opening, and then the other, and I was inside the hayloft. Watery white moonlight streamed between the cracks in the boards, so I could see pretty well. Wink crawled in behind me, quick and easy, like she'd done it a million times, which I guess she had. The hay smelled nice, kind of sweet and dry, like sawdust. There were square bales of it everywhere, all over the big, airy, angled ceiling room. Most were piled up against one wall, but the floor was covered in a thick carpet of hay, too. Wink picked up something from the ground, and then reached into her pocket with her free hand. I heard a fizzed sound, and then a flame cut through the darkness. She lit the lantern she was holding and set it back down. The hayloft filled with shadows. "Isn't that dangerous?" I asked. "A lantern with all this hay?" Wink fluttered the fingers of both hands in a Swedish, dismissive gesture.
"We haven't set fire to anything yet."
I thought about Mrs. Bell, and how she let all her kids do whatever they wanted, and how they all were still alive and thriving somehow. My own father was gentle and compassionate, but his list of forbiddens had been a mile long when Alabama and I were kids. He took full responsibility for our staying alive, and we hadn't been allowed to go ice skating on Troll Lake, or sledding down Alabaster Hill, or hike any lonely forest trails that might be hiding cougars or bears. It bothered Alabama more than me, since he was born with a death wish. Sometimes I wondered if that's why my mother preferred Alabama, because he took risks and liked to put himself in danger, and was cool and didn't care about things that didn't matter. Alabama had his dad's silk-black hair and high cheekbones and narrow black eyes, and even though neither of us had ever met him, I had a feeling that Alabama's father was cool and full of death wishes, just like my brother. I suppose that's why my mother fell in love with him.
"It's for the horses," Wink said.
She sank down on top of a 2-foot pile of the thin blonde sticks, heaved a great sigh, and looked happy.
"The hay, I mean."
"You have horses?" I saw a small beaten-up table with 2 short stools at one end of the barn. There were toys everywhere, balls and dolls and jump ropes, and a scattered pack of playing cards and books, and an old wooden rocking horse missing his tail. Wink nodded and tucked her arms behind her head.
"They live in a large fenced-in area near the old gold apple mine. Mim bought them off a man in Sleepy Peak. He said they were too old to ride. So now we just let them run wild back there in the summer. Some of the mine's buildings are still standing, and there's a little creek. But there's no road to it, and no one ever goes back there. The horses have the run of the place. We round them up and keep them warm in here in the winter. Mim's got a soft heart for animals."
I sat down beside her and leaned back, just like she did, putting my arms behind my head. I thought the hay would be itchy, but it wasn't. "Why do you call your mother Mim?" I asked, since I was really starting to wonder. Wink turned her head until her cheek rested on her upper arm. Her red eyebrows tilted toward each other.
"Why? What do you call yours?"
Her face was 2 feet from mine, but her hair was so big it spread out between us and tickled my chin. "I don't call her anything right now. She took my older brother, Alabama, and went to France a few months ago. She's a mystery writer and is setting a series there. Something historical about the Cathars." I let out a sigh of relief. That hadn't been as hard as I'd thought it would be. Wink was the first person I'd told.
"When is she coming back?"
I shrugged. Wink reached out and put her fingers on my right wrist, on the tender inner side. She moved her fingertips back and forth, kind of gentle and soft, sort of like how she petted the dogs earlier, right between their ears. Her hand felt small and warm and really, really nice. "Why were you named Wink?" I asked out of the blue. She looked at me in that sweet, staring way she had.
"I don't know. Why were you named Midnight?"
"My mom said it's because I was born at midnight, right at the stroke of 12. But my dad says I was born near dawn, just as the sun was coming up. So who knows?" Wink just nodded and went back to brushing her fingers across my wrist. She was doing that thing again, that no-talking thing that made me feel dreamy and peaceful. "I'm sorry," I said after a while. "I'm so sorry, Wink. Poppy's got you on her radar now, and it's my fault."
"It's all right," Wink said, whispery-voiced. "She was just trying to embarrass you through me. She wanted to make you feel helpless."
Wink. For a girl with a lost and an enchanted forest look in her eyes, she didn't seem to miss much.
"Don't let her win, Midnight. Don't feel embarrassed or helpless. Then she'll have no power over you."
Easier said than done. Wink had a heart-shaped freckle, right above the inner elbow hollow of her left arm. It matched her heart-shaped face. I wanted to touch it. I wanted to put the fleshy part of my thumb right on it. She smiled at me, big, and it made her ears stick out until they looked elvish.
"So everyone saw my unicorn underwear, Midnight. So what? Repeat after me. So everyone saw Wink's unicorn underwear. Who cares?"
I grinned and did it. "So everyone saw Wink's unicorn underwear. Who cares?"
"There,"
she said, and laughed. And her laugh was full and high, and chinkled like the keys on the toy piano I'd had as a kid.
"In 100 years, who will care about my unicorn underwear? Who cares right now? There are bigger things to think about."
"Bigger things like what?"
"Battles and wars, lost causes and lost loves, unsolved mysteries and magical rings, and here be dragons, fairy paths, child-eating witches and child-saving witches,
tinderboxes and saucer-eyed dogs. It was the longest she'd talked so far, and her voice got quieter and quieter toward the end until her words were almost a lullaby.
"I'm using my putting the orphans to sleep voice," Wink said.
"I could go to sleep right here in the hay," I said, and yawned.
"Midnight?"
"Yeah."
"What do you want to be?"
"You mean, what do I want to do? Like whether I want to be a writer like my mom, or a rare book dealer like my dad?"
"Yes."
A breeze blew through the opening to the hayloft and rattled the lantern. The flame flickered, and the shadows in the barn jumped. "I want to be a treasure hunter." I probably should have said something realistic and normal. Something like professional soccer player, or film director, or private investigator. I waited for her to laugh. Poppy would have laughed, but Wink just looked at me. "I don't want to find relics, though, like the Ark of the Covenant. I want to find music and art. I want to find lost Bach compositions in German monasteries. I want to track down the missing paintings of Vermeer and Rembrandt, and the lost plays of Shakespeare. I want to crawl through castles and dig through attics and search through cellars."
"You would be good at that," Wink said.
And I wasn't ashamed of my confession anymore. Not a bit. Even though I've never admitted my treasure-hunting dreams to anyone except Alabama. Wink smiled at me, and her ears popped out again. "What do you want to be?" She made a soft, hmm sound.
"I want to be a sandman. I want to crawl in children's windows and blow softly on their necks and sprinkle sand in their eyes. I want to make up stories and whisper them in the children's ears and give them good dreams."
She breathed in and out, her skinny ribs rising in her strange green dress.
"Sometimes I do this for the orphans. When there's a thunderstorm and they're tossing and turning, I sit beside them and whisper until they sleep, deep and quiet."
She was looking at the hayloft ceiling, and I was looking at her. "What kind of stories do you make up?"
"Well, I have a story about a cruel, selfish witch girl named Fel Rose. She casts a spell on an entire village and makes them all her slaves, makes them dance to her wishes like puppets on strings, all except a dark-haired boy named Isaac, who figures out her weakness and takes away her powers."
"What happens?" I asked, all caught up already. "What happens to Fel Rose and Isaac?" She turned her head to the side and met my eyes.
"They become friends."
She paused.
"The orphans always fall asleep before I get to the end. But I think they become friends."
We both stopped talking for a while, and I soaked up the comfortable silence. "How many brothers and sisters do you have?" I asked a little while later. Wink didn't answer me, just made a hmm sound again. "What happened to your dad? Do you read tarot cards like your mother? Did your older brother Leaf really run off to the Amazon?" I was spewing questions suddenly, but didn't feel embarrassed. Not at all. Wink just laughed, chinkle, chinkle. She stared at the high barn ceiling, stretched her arms above her head, and sighed.
"There are 5 orphans," she said, "not counting the one that left."
I found out later that there was pretty much no way of getting the direct truth out of Wink when she didn't want to give it. So that was all I got in response. A few minutes went by, and I watched Wink's profile in the shadowy barn light, her small doll nose and her pointed chin. That morning I'd been standing next to my new home and looking at the farmhouse across the road and wondering if I'd finally managed to leave Poppy behind. And now here I was, in a hayloft with Wink Bell, and more content than I'd been since Mom and Alabama and France.
"Are you going to get revenge?"
Wink asked in her sleepy voice, out of the blue.
"You picked the 3 of Swords, and I think it means that you plan to get revenge. I think you want to punish Poppy, like Thief punished the Thing in the Deep when he lured her out of the castle and into the open, so he could fight her under the blue sky, in the sun."
"Revenge on Poppy? No, all I want to do is get away from her."
"But heroes get revenge. That's what they do.
I thought heroes saved people and brought about happy endings.
Yes, but first comes the revenge and the making wrong things right.
And I thought Wink was going to whisper something in my ear when she leaned in then. Something else about heroes and thieves and vengeance and Fell Rose and the boy. So when she put her lips on mine, I jerked. She held still for a second, and then tried again. If I'd thought about it, I would have guessed that Wink would kiss like a little girl, since she still kind of looked like one. Sweet and tender and shy. Two quick pecks, and then running away. But her kisses were hunger and experience and skill and want. She grabbed my arms and then my hair and brought my face down to hers. And when my lips touched her neck, her skin was sweet as sugar.
Poppy. I had acquired the yellows my sophomore year because people of my caliber need an entourage. Thomas was so wounded and sad all the time, broken home and a dead baby sister, and he was one of those people who felt things deeply, deeply. And Briggs was the opposite, feisty and temperamental and jaunty, like the ankle-biting Pomeranians that live across the street. I drove Thomas and Briggs batshit crazy all year, and they were just the icing on the cake after midnight. I was the center, the sun, and they were all spinning around me.
No, Poppy. You're nothing. You're nothing at all.
Leaf's voice in the back of my head, back of my heart, creeping up on me like a wolf in the woods. I liked to brag to him that I wasn't scared of anything. But he knew. He knew that deep down, I'm terrified I'll get old and ugly, and it will all catch up to me, and my cruelty will echo through my wrinkles and liver spots, and everyone will stop doing what I want or listening to me, or even worse, forget about me altogether. But I plan on dying when I'm still young and beautiful, like Marilyn Monroe. Just watch me. Buttercup was the daughter of a martial arts movie star who was never around. He left her here in Broken Bridge along with his wife, and only came back for holidays. And Buttercup's mother was tall and beautiful and elegant, long swinging black hair, like mother like daughter. I'd seen her once at the farmer's market and once in the bookstore, but I don't think she spoke English, not very well. Zoe was the leader of the two, even though Buttercup did all the talking. Zoe liked to stand in her shadow publicly, but secretly, she made all the decisions, called all the shots. People can surprise you that way, if you pay attention, which mostly I don't. Zoe came from a loving family. Her parents were loaded and liberal and let her do and be whatever she wanted. As in, if she turned to them one day and said, "Mom, Dad, I've decided that I want to be a banana, that's who I am," they'd be like, "We'll pick up some yellow fabric in town." I half-hated Zoe most of the time for this, but sometimes I was just kind of enraptured with her, too, like how people fawn over the UK royals, scrambling after each tiny golden tidbit of glittering personal info, like starving dogs. I basked in her sunshiny life and daydreamed about being a tiny pixie girl with brown curls and parents that didn't give a damn in all the right ways. Once upon a time, Zoe and Buttercup and I were rubbing gravestones in the Green Williams Cemetery, because that's what they wanted to do, and I was trying to be more charitable and let them get their way sometimes. The weather had turned, and the sun was gone, and Leaf found me as I was scraping my charcoal piece over my thousandth, "Here lies the body of," the dark clouds bounding in. He told me to follow him, and I did, dropping the tracing paper and the charcoal without another word to Zoe and Buttercup. I didn't even think of them. They didn't even exist anymore. We went to the woods, and I told Leaf how I was trying to be better. How I wasn't so bad. Not really. Not in my inner deeps. I was only bad when I wanted to be, at least. I could help it. I could stop any time. He laughed and said I was hopeless and sad. But when I pressed myself into his bony ribs, he pressed back. He put his palms on my cheeks and his lips on my forehead, and he just held me and held me and held me until the sky cracked and the rain started pouring. I swore to be better then, to give it all I had, to put my whole heart in it until I felt it straining. I'd be nicer to my parents, try to be what they thought I was. I'd be a better friend to Zoe and Buttercup. I'd stop torturing all the boys and let them move on and find someone who could love them back. I could do it. I really could. Keep it up, Poppy. Keep it up. Keep it up. It would last a few hours, all the good intents, a few days even. But then I'd snap back, cruel, 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 relishing every little lick of it on my tongue.
Wink. I shouldn't have kissed the hero. The kissing was supposed to come at the very end. After the monster and the fight. After the glass coffin and the pinprick of blood. But Midnight was lying there in the hay, and his eyes were sad, and his hair was curling on the apple of his cheek. I wanted to hold his heart in my hand, reach into his chest, and cradle it in my palm, like one of Nana's newborn kittens, with its frail tiger stripes and its eyes still closed. I read The Orphans of Fairy Tale once, called Giant Heart Egg. It was about a troll who kept his heart hidden in an egg in a distant lake, so he couldn't be killed. I wished Midnight's heart was hidden far away in a distant lake. I wanted to stand guard over it. I wanted to cast magic spells and train dragons to protect it. I wanted to make sure it would be safe until happily ever after. Leaf said that reading a book out of order was dangerous because things were supposed to happen 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And if they didn't, if 4 went before 2, the whole world spun upside down and bad things came in the night. What would happen now that I had put the end of my story in the beginning? Would my world spin upside down? Would Midnight's? Leaf never talked. Almost never. He was like Pa. He was like the great horned owl with bloody talons in The Witch Girl and the Wolf Boy. He rarely spoke, and when he did, you listened. Leaf once told me that there was absolutely no difference between The Orphan's fairy tales and the nose on my face, because both were only as real as I thought they were.
Midnight. Sunlight on my cheeks. The windows in my old bedroom, back at the house in town, faced west, so I woke to dim light even when the sky was blue. But my creaky new bedroom was two big windows of full, dead east. I lifted my fingers and spread them out in the warm yellow sunshine, one behind the other, like I had superpowers, like I was shooting sunlight laser beams. My old bedroom had muted green carpet and white walls and a sensible closet. My new bedroom had a warped old wardrobe that came with the house, a working fireplace, and a slanting hardwood floor that made a nice slapping sound when my feet hit it. I'd taken down the dusty yellow curtains the day before and left the windows bare. So my room was just the bed, the bare windows, two black bookcases, full, and one dresser, plus the aforementioned wardrobe. Nothing on the walls. I thought I might put up the map of Middle-earth that Alabama got me for Christmas right over the bed, maybe. But nothing else. I liked the open space. Mom used to say I was a minimalist, but Alabama was a pack rat like her, and their endless boxes of pack rat things were now sitting in the musty brick basement, filling it to the brim. I wondered if they would ever come back for them, or just start acquiring new pack rat things in France. Dad didn't seem to mind the boxes. He didn't mind much of anything concerning Mom in Alabama. Dad loved my half-brother just as much as he loved me. And maybe this should have pissed me off, since Alabama got most of my mom's love and half my dad's as well, but I was sort of awed by my dad's capacity for loving a son who wasn't his blood. I think Alabama was, too. He and Mom were of the same mind about pretty much everything, but with Dad, he always gave in, even when he didn't agree. I used to catch Alabama standing in the doorway of Dad's office, watching him as he huddled over his rare books. He would have this soft look in his eyes, this small smile on his face, and the whole scene was kind of beautiful. I missed my brother. I went to the windows and put my palms on the sill and breathed in the green-smelling summer air, grass and dew and pine. The leaves on the apple trees twinkled in the morning sun like stars. The light hit my bare chest, and I leaned into it. I liked being out in the country. It suited me better than town. 3 red-haired kids were running around the Bell farm. The dogs were barking happily at a brown and white goat, and one of the kids had climbed on the goat's back and was shouting, "Tally-ho, Billy, tally-ho!" But the goat was just ignoring everyone, standing still and eating some wildflowers growing near an old red water pump. I didn't see Wink. I closed my eyes. That girl made me feel like I was dreaming, broad daylight dreaming. She would make a good Sandman, I guess. After the hayloft kissing, Wink had cuddled into me, trusting and easy, like she'd been doing it her whole life. Her skinny legs nestled between mine. Her palms spread open over my chest. Her face pressed into my neck so tight I could feel it when she blinked, soft lashes on my skin. I'd only ever kissed Poppy before the hayloft. Poppy did everything flawless, perfect. She knew right where to put her lips, and yours. And yet, Poppy's kisses were flimsy and soft, like butterfly wings or fresh breadcrumbs. But Wink kissed deep, deep as a dark, misty forest path, one that led to blood and love and death and monsters. She kissed with yearning. I'd felt that yearning before. I'd yearned at Poppy all year. So hard I thought I might burst into flames, spontaneous yearning combustion, but I'd never felt any yearning back. I stretched into the fresh air bouncing through my window and smiled. Who knew there was so much going on inside a small red-haired girl with strawberry-buttoned overalls? Alabama dated a lot of girls. A lot of girls. Girls went to him like flies to honey, like kids to puddles, like cats to shafts of sun. I once asked him if he liked any over the others, if any of them meant anything. We were walking home from a late-night horror movie. I remembered Alabama's boot heels click-clacking on the cobblestone street that led to our old house. My brother stopped walking and looked at me. He always wore his hair long, past his shoulders. He sometimes tied it back with a thin strap of leather, but not that night. It was blowing free in the summer breeze, flickering black, then blue, then black again in the yellow street light. "Midnight, do you know Tally Jasper?" I did. Tally was a puzzle. She had waist-long brown hair and played the cello. She was always lugging that big instrument around. She sat by herself at lunch, reading a book while she ate an apple. She was always eating apples. Her parents owned some overpriced clothing company, but she never acted like the other rich kids, spoiled and aggressive and entitled and loud. She was nice to the unpopular kids, and prickly with the popular ones. She once smiled sweetly at me when I accidentally stepped on her foot in the cafeteria. She said, "It's okay, Midnight," and then walked away. And I remembered being really pleased that she knew my name. Tally has more going on inside her head than anyone I've ever met. And someday I'm going to find out what. Meanwhile, I'm just biding my time. We started walking again, turned down our block. We reached Poppy's big house, perfect grassy lawn, perfect white pillars, perfect gazebo off to the side. I slowed down. Alabama slowed too. "How do you know that about Tally? How can you tell?" "I just have a feeling." Alabama smiled. "Plus there was the time I ran into her late one night near the Blue Twist River, where it curves at the edge of town. She was just standing at the edge, watching the stars. She turned, caught me watching her, and then..." Alabama's eyes flashed the same way our mom's did when she was talking about a new idea for a book. "And then she grabbed me with both hands, clenched my shirt in her fists, reached up, and kissed me." and she never said a word. Still hasn't said a word to me. I once passed her in the hall at school, and I brushed her arm as I walked by. She looked up at me and smiled, but kept on walking. That's it. So I wait. Alabama chuckled, cool and lazy, and then Mom called down from the upstairs window, wanting him to come help her with a bit in her story. He opened the door and went to her. I was still full of poppy love when Alabama told me about Tally. It was last summer, and I was caught up in her like a soft white cloud in a black thunderstorm. I'd no idea what my brother was talking about. Now I knew, though. I wondered if Alabama missed Tally, in France. I wondered how long he was going to wait for her. I found my dad in the attic. He'd taken it as his new office library, which meant that he'd had to move 6 million heavy boxes of books up 2 creaking flights of stairs the day before. Dad liked to collect things, like Mom and Alabama did, but collecting was his business, so he had the excuse. I gave him a mug of green tea. Mom and Alabama drank coffee and nothing else. And my dad drank green tea and nothing else. I wasn't sure what I drank yet. Dad took the tea and sipped and smiled. He was unloading old wrinkled-looking books and auction catalogs. Everything was a mess, which drove me kind of crazy. I liked things clean. The angled ceiling meant my dad had to duck whenever he walked to the corners of the narrow, rectangular room. Exposed beams and dust. But he seemed to like it. I noticed that he'd put up his wedding picture on his antique desk. My dad wasn't giving anything away about his true feelings regarding my mom leaving with my brother. So I looked for hints where I could. I put my palms on the polished wood and leaned in closer. My dad in a brown suit, looking big-eyed, deer in headlights. But my mom was wearing her wide, beautiful smile, the one that made her eyes go soft and twinkly. And if sometimes I thought her smile in that picture looked genuine but a bit strained, well, I was probably just reading into it. "So you were talking with the oldest bell girl yesterday," Dad said, not looking at me, his eyes on the green leather book in his hands. "Yeah, I like her," he added. But what he meant was, I like her better than Poppy. My dad knew what Poppy was the moment she first walked through our door. He would have put her on the list of forbiddens if he could have. Eli Hunt respected maturity like he respected privacy. He let us, both me and Alabama, make our own rules after we turned 16. For better or worse, I was in charge of my own life now.
Poppy. There was a big thunderstorm a few years ago. It knocked down trees and houses and flooded the Blue Twist River, and everyone was super into it. It was exciting. Destruction is exciting, no matter what they say. I went down to the river just to watch it rising and to see what had been picked up in its stormy path. Patio furniture, toys, dead animals. I found Leaf standing on the bank, leaning against a tree, inches from the muddy, swirling rapids, doing the same fucking thing. "It's beautiful," he said, after we'd been there in the pelting rain for a while and had both just watched a red wooden door go floating past, and then a blue bike, and then a pair of black boots tied together by the shoelaces, and then a little fox on its back, its dead paws on its belly. I went to the hayloft a lot after Leaf left on the bus. Sometimes the bell brats were in there, but when they weren't, I climbed the ladder and sat in the sun. Hey, quiet. And now Midnight was living by them, right across the street. I suppose he thought he was moving up in the world and getting away from me. Yeah, as if it would be that easy, as if. As if. Why is everyone around me so undeniably dumb? I want to like people. I do, actually. But they're all just so dumb. I'd already felt Midnight edging away from me before he moved out to that dumpy farmhouse. And then I found him talking to Farrell on the steps, and he was just so into her. Into the red hair and freckles and weirdness. I felt sick just thinking about it. Well, If Midnight wanted to be with Wink and her fairy tales and her hayloft and unicorn underwear and overalls, then I'd show him who she was. I'd really, really show him.
Wink. Midnight found me as I was coaxing little blue eggs out from underneath one of the pretty white silkies. I brought him inside to the kitchen and made poached yellow eyes on toast for him and the orphans. You need a big boiling pot to make poached yellow eyes, which I like because using a big boiling pot makes me feel like I'm a witchy. Mim was in her reading room, so I made coffee too. She didn't like me to drink coffee. She said it would give me dark dreams. I didn't give any of it to the orphans, just me and Midnight, sipping from the same blue cup, fresh cream and brown sugar. The hero stood closer to me after the hayloft, and he looked at me different, too. I told him the names of the orphans, and we picked strawberries from the garden. I showed him how to squish his bare toes in the black dirt. We ate the berries ripe and juicy and hot from the sun, like Laura and Lizzie at the Goblin Market. For your sake, I have braved the glen and had to do with goblin merchantmen. Eat me, drink me, love me. Hero wolf, make much of me, with clasping arms and cautioning lips, with tingling cheeks and fingertips. Cooing all together.
Midnight. The day so far. Gathering eggs, breakfast, playing hide-and-seek, weeding the big square garden between the house and the barn, playing fetch with the dogs, Mim making caprese salad for lunch with golden olive oil and fresh-picked basil and tomatoes, us all eating it standing at the kitchen table, me drawing up a treasure map for the orphans, us all following it to the back pasture, digging holes with rusty shovels, looking for treasure. When the sun got too hot, I went home to get my tools. Coins, handkerchief, cards, steel rings. They were in a box in the basement. I kept them hidden since Poppy found them several months ago and teased me about it for weeks. I did my magic tricks for Wink and Company in the hayloft. And the kids sat still and wide-eyed and didn't even talk. Wink watched me closely and smiled her big, ear-sticking-out smile at the end. After I put my magic stuff away, Wink pulled the thing in the deep out of the pocket of her overalls and started reading. She sat on an old quilt spread over a pile of hay, barefoot, overalls, the orphans around her, and me. The sun was streaming in the hayloft opening, low and hazy, which was the only way I could tell how late it was. Time seemed to have stopped entirely. I hadn't had a day go by so dreamily, so lazily, since I was a little kid. Since before I understood the concept of time. The tips of Wink's fingers were still stained from the strawberries. Tiny pink-red little flicks as she turned the pages. Her lips were stained, too. I watched them as they moved with the words. Mouth as red as blood. B. Lee cuddled up next to me, head against my side. The orphans consisted of three boys and two girls. All redheads, except for B, who had deep brown hair. B had just turned 7 years old. I knew this because it was one of the first things she told me. The twins were Hops and Moon. The oldest boy was Felix. And last of all was Tiny Peach, the youngest. The 10-year-old twins were the wildest. They always seemed to be trying to outdo the other. Who could scream the loudest? Who could get the dogs howling? Who could put the most hay down the other's shirt? After that came Peach, who was about 5 or 6, but had the same loud, rascally fierceness of the twins. Felix was maybe 14, and had the look of his older brother Leaf about him. He was quieter than the others, though his eyes were lively enough. B. Lee was already my favorite. She was cuddly and sweet, like the Bichon Frise I'd had when I was little. She was always trying to squeeze her hand into mine, or put her dimpled little arm around my waist. Wink had a beautiful reading voice, delicate and slow. She read about Thief, about the death of his father and the prophecy. She read about his journey into the cursed woods, just him and the clothes on his back and the sword his father left him. She read about how he needed to steal food, apples from orchards and pies from windowsills, to keep himself from starving. She read about how he sat by his small fire at night and sang the old songs to keep his loneliness at bay. We heard Mim call out, "Dinner," just as Wink read the last word of the fifth chapter. She slipped the book back in her pocket. The orphans jumped up and took off for the house, Bee Lee giving me a shy smile over her shoulder before darting down the ladder. I looked at Wink, and she was looking at me. "Should we go to dinner?" I asked. She shrugged. I got to my knees. I put my fingers on the small of her back and kissed her belly button, right through her cotton overalls. She put her hands on my head, her strawberry-stained fingertips in my hair. I turned my chin and leaned my cheek against her. "What the hell is this?" I jerked. Wink's hands dropped to her sides. I opened my eyes, closed them, opened them again, let go of Wink, and stood up. "Poppy." Wink stepped backward, a quiet sidle into the corner shadows. Poppy ignored her. She was wearing another short, swoopy sort of dress, the kind that showed more than it hid. It was green, the same color as Wink's eyes. "You weren't home, and your dad wouldn't tell me where you'd gone. He's always hated me." She paused and ran her hand down her hair, smoothing it, drawing attention to it. "But I figured it out." "You're trespassing," I said. "This is Wink's farm. You're not welcome. She doesn't want you here." Poppy laughed. She grabbed me by the front of my shirt and yanked me toward her. Then she narrowed her eyes at the darkness behind me. "Is that true, Farrell? You don't want me here?" Wink stayed in the shadows. Poppy let go of my shirt and walked into the dark. She wrapped her fingers around the right strap of Wink's overalls and pulled her, one step, two, back into the fading evening light at the center of the hayloft. Wink followed, meek as a lamb. Poppy brushed a curly strand of Wink's hair off her cheek. Wink didn't stop her. "Do you think Midnight is a prince come to rescue you from being a loser?" Poppy kept her fingers on Wink's face. "Is that what you think? I bet you kissed him last night, after you showed everyone your unicorn underwear at the party. I bet you crawled all over him. You bells. You're nothing but animals. Dirty and sex-crazed like a bunch of smelly goats." "Stop it, Poppy." I didn't scream it. I didn't even raise my voice. But she took her hand from Wink's cheek and turned around. "You protecting your new little girlfriend, Midnight? Wow, that's adorable." She put her hand on her hip and twitched her torso until her dress swung against her upper thighs. Swish, swish. "How can you stand it? How can you stand kissing such a pasty, freckled, dirty thing? Is it just hormones? Is this some kind of testament to the male organ? Should I be taking notes? Putting together an academic study? You're so mean." I said it quiet, really quiet, but she was listening. "Why are you always so mean? What's wrong with you? Were you born like this? Sometimes I think there must be a hole in your heart, one that hurts and makes you roar like an animal with its leg in a trap. Is that it, Poppy? Is that why?" Poppy just stared at me. An evening breeze blew in and stirred the hay, and we all just stood there. She turned, walked to the ladder, climbed down, left. And then Wink was at my side, slipping her hand into mine.
"Let's go to dinner,"
she said. And without even looking, I knew she was smiling. I could hear it in her voice, sense it in her fingers. Strawberry tips pressing into my palm.
Poppy. You stare at Leaf Bell. You stare at him a lot. A lot. Zoe echoed, her stupid brown pixie curls twitching as she nodded her head, her and Buttercup both looking at me. The two of them lived next door to each other, had always lived next door to each other. They showed up in kindergarten doing the creepy, creepy twin thing, same clothes and repeating each other's sentences and talking in unison. They have different hair and different skin and different eyes, and one's tall and one's tiny. But for a long time, I could barely tell them apart. Though, to be honest, I never really tried. We were sitting in the bleachers, done running, wet hair from the showers making damp trails down our t-shirts. Buttercup and Zoe ran in black shorts and black shirts and striped socks pulled up to their knees. It would have been less laughable if they didn't take it so seriously. The boys were on the track, Leaf in front. He was always in front. He was the best runner at our 1,300 kids' school. We took state the last 2 years, and he was why.
Leaf is vile.
Buttercup. All the bells are vile. Zoe. Aren't they? They said that last bit together, twinsy style. Shut up, Buttercup. Shut up, Zoe. And then they swapped a secret, knowing smile. I felt like slapping it off their faces, but instead I told them that if they ever mentioned Leaf's name again, I would spread a rumor that I'd caught the two of them kissing the hot new math teacher, Mr. Dunn, in the cemetery, back by the Redding Mausoleum, long grass hiding them from view. Details make a lie. It's all in the details. Buttercup and Zoe knew this by now.